Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport. TheKingsOfSport.com.
I'm Alfred Kunawa, and we're talking the NBA, the MLB, the UFC, and this week we're N-word free!
I'm Artis Vandenberg, and in honor of Memorial Day, we're giving our picks for the most memorable sports veterans. Plus, we'll tell you what Jose Canseco and Amanda Bynes have in common.
And I'm Nate Milton. Norm Souza's back in the house to talk about his new show debuting Tuesday night on Spike TV, and we'll get you caught up on all the latest stories from the world of professional wrestling. We've got all that and more for you on this week's program, so sit back, buckle up, and enjoy the ride, because you're down with the Kings. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Kunawa, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vandenberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time. I am your host, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa and, of course, Marcus Vandenberg. What is going on, fellas? Memorial Day weekend.
What's going on, Nate?
What's up, Nate?
Not much. Had some delicious food and some cold adult beverages today. And, you know, it's been a great weekend and a great day today. And so hopefully we'll be able to be something good for the people out there to close their weekend out with another exciting action-packed episode of the Kings of Sport. But before we get to the action out there on the fields and the hard court and the ice and all that good stuff, I want to let you guys know about our sponsor once again, the good people over at audible.com. and for you listeners out there, Audible is currently offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And, you know, there's some great books. They got a great genres and authors out there. You got The Hobbit, you got The Witness, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, A History of Nazi Germany, which may or may not be a good book for today. and, of course, like I said, one of my favorite books is Last Season, the book that Phil Jackson wrote about his final season with the Lakers. So, you know, again, Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. They've got over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre, and, they service iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. So to check out this offer, to check out the trial, all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. So you can get your free audiobook today. So with that being said, fellas, we got to start where we start every week around this time of year. NBA playoffs, the Heat up 2-1 on a scrappy Indiana Pacers team, and the Spurs, even more shockingly, up 3-0 on the Whoop That Trick All-Stars. The Memphis Grizzlies down 3-0. They got another game tipping off here in just a little bit. It is Monday night when we're recording this. So starting with you, Brother Alfred, what have been your impressions of the playoffs in the past week?
I love the mettle of the Miami Heat. There's an old saying where the human race will react two different ways when they taste their own blood. Either they get an anxiety about them, like, oh my God, I'm bleeding, and they freak out and they get scared, or maybe they just find the sink, they spit it out, and they keep going, and maybe it makes them angrier. And we've seen all playoffs long, if the Miami Heat get angrier when they taste their own blood, game one against Chicago, they come back, game two, and they whoop the Bulls, game two against the Indiana Pacers, they came back, game three, and blew them out of the water on the road. This Miami Heat team, I just love them to go all the way, because every time we see them look weak, we see their weaknesses and their matchup problems, they just know how to come right back, and put it on the team that seems to give them a problem.
So what you're saying is the Miami Heat are like the Joseph Park of the NBA?
That's exactly what they're like. Maybe a little more mentally stable. Just a little more mentally stable.
Yeah, shout out to all our TNA fans out there. But, you know, Alfred, going back to that Heat series, I mean, the Pacers very well could be up, you know, instead of being down 2-1, they could very well be up 2-1. So, you know, what have been your thoughts early on with the first three games of Miami and Indiana?
Well, with Miami and Indiana, it's tricky because the Pacers are such a good defensive team, but they don't have the offensive firepower to really pull away from teams. So the type of games they want is that kind of ugly game where it's really close and they're able to pull it out at the end. But if you get a team like the Miami Heat who knows how to shoot the three and gets ahead of them, they're just very prone to being blown out. You remember the game they lost against the New York Knicks when it was for three quarters, it was a slugfest, just like they wanted. But then the Knicks absolutely pulled away at the end and they got blown out again by Miami. So if Indiana is able to keep it close, Indiana's going to have a chance. But that's way easier said than done against the Miami Heat team that's got Ray Allen, LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade, who can go off shooting threes, especially Norris Cole and even Mario Chalmers.
Now, Marcus, do you see any way that Frank Vogel can coach these boys up and, you know, get Hibbert and those guys playing to their full potential and seeing them getting back in the series, maybe even stealing the series?
Zero chance. I mean, game four is a must win now for Indiana. And I don't see it happening. You know, you poked the bear in Miami Heat. You know, they got that one loss under their belt, much like the Chicago series where they went down 1-0 and they just, you know, went four straight against Chicago. They lost game two to Indiana and destroyed Indiana last night in game three. So game four becomes a must win. They can't go back to Miami down 3-1 in the series. And I just don't see, you know, once LeBron and Wade get locked in, I don't see how Indiana or any team in the NBA can stop them.
Now let's switch over to the other series. Like I mentioned before, Memphis, they were kind of everybody's dark horse pick once, you know, Kobe went down and Russell Westbrook went down and the West kind of opened up. And a lot of people jumped on that Memphis bandwagon. But to whoop them tricks, All-Stars.
Whoop that trick.
What? Get them. Hustle and Flow. Great movie, by the way.
Great chant.
Yeah, that is one of the... One of the, you know, side story, I saw Hustle and Flow in the theaters when it first came out. And, you know, let's just say the movie theater was populated by a lot of folks that didn't exactly resemble me.
Hmm.
You know, and not that there's anything wrong with that. But by the end of the movie, everybody, you know, myself, cast that didn't look like me, older people, young people, we was all, whoop that trick, get him,
whoop get him. That trick.
Yes, I saw an old lady, she might have been like about 60 years old, like, whoop that trick.
So, abuse yeah, that young lady.
Yes, abuse that loose woman. So yeah, if you ain't seen Hustle and Flow yet, come on, I mean, It's on Netflix. Just go get it. Go rent it. It's a good movie. But besides that, back to the Spurs series, man. It's the way that these guys have kind of reinvented themselves. The Spurs kind of everybody thought they were done against Golden State. They came back, closed out Golden State. They've been played tough against Memphis and Pop the other night sapped the starters and the bench players found a way to get things done. You know, well, how do you like the – I mean, this series is a foregone conclusion, Marcus, but let's kind of project ahead. How do you think that this Spurs team that we're seeing right now matches up potentially against Miami?
I think they have a decent shot to match up with Miami. You know, what Miami lacks is really big. You know, we've seen Roy Hibbert sort of go off when he's not sitting on the bench in this series against Miami. And, you know, San Antonio has – probably the greatest power forward of all time in Tim Duncan, and they have a serviceable big man in Thiago Splitter who will give the Heat fits in the middle, especially with Chris Bosh. I mean, you know, Bosh is a nice four and all, but, you know, going against Duncan, I'm not sure what he's going to do with him. And in terms of the backcourt, you know, Tony Parker can, you know, he can have his way if he's going to be guarded by Norris Cole. The interesting thing will be to see where LeBron matches up on the floor. You have Kawhi Leonard, who's a great on-ball defender who can sort of shut down LeBron. And that leaves, you know, Wade and just Danny Green or whatever combination of guards they go with. So I'm intrigued to see this series. You know, the Spurs did a bad rap for being a quote-unquote boring team, but I'm actually interested to watch this series between the Spurs and the Heat.
The thing I love about the Spurs, they kind of remind me of the Braves back in the 90s. You know, I'm big Braves fan, and when they had that run where they were winning division championships and National League crowns and going to World Series and ultimately losing most of them, you know, they had a core group of guys, but then they also were able to bring in free agents or bring in rookies and keep, you know, reloading. And that's exactly what the Spurs have done. We've seen, you know, the emergence of Leonard and Green and Tiago Splitter, as Stephen A. Smith would say. And I think that, you know, you got to give all the credit in the world to Coach Popovich and also, you know, the veterans, Parker, Duncan, Ginobili, you know, for being able to step back and not have that ego and, you know, accept some of these changes. Like, I don't think Mike D'Antoni could have gotten away with benching Kobe, Dwight, and Powell at the same time, Alfred.
Yeah, that's the brilliance of Greg Popovich, is that he just knows how to coach, and he's never going to be looked at, and he will be looked at as one of the greatest coaches of all time, but I don't think he's ever going to get his rap. I think he's always going to be more underrated than he is overrated. Let me just say about this series, though. I know the Spurs are up 3-0. I know they're the San Antonio Spurs, but this Memphis Grizzlies team all season long has been great. You've seen it last year when it came, you know, they've come back from big deficits and they've been able to close out gaps like they did in Game 2. And in Game 3, it was very close. So they've obviously found that competitive gap, and they've closed it. And I don't want to count the Memphis Grizzlies out yet. They're gritty. They don't quit. They don't go away.
Yeah, but they lost all three games.
They did. But you know what? They can come back, and there is a very, very, very small chance that they can make this a series. Yeah, just know that.
The only reason why the Spurs would lose Game 4 is because Pop doesn't want to give these guys 9 days off between the finals. The finals start June 6th. So if say the Spurs won tonight on Monday, they're off until next Thursday. So the only reason why, you know, they would lose this Game 4 is because Pop's like, look, we need these guys to be, you know, active. We can't have these guys sitting around. So we'll give Memphis a game. But no, they're not coming back in this series.
Yeah, unless David Stern gives them a call and wants them to prolong the series to get more revenue.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Alvin, like, I think you're just out there on a limb trying to get your next Southern Florida prediction.
I'm not trying to look like the smartest guy in the room. I realize the Grizzlies are in a lot of trouble. And remember, I picked the Spurs in 7. So you know what? I'm sticking to that prediction. The Spurs win in 7 games.
Wow. So Memphis wins 3 games straight?
Memphis wins 3 games straight. You heard me. Did I say it?
What you been sipping on this Memorial Day, brother?
Don't worry about that. But I am clear-headed right now. The Memphis Tool. And I really do like the Memphis. I love the Whoop That Trick All-Stars.
Well, they probably need to use a little bit more ground and pound to take out this Spurs team. But, you know, switching from the NBA playoffs, let's continue our talk of all things ground and pound. And big weekend for the UFC, Alfred. I know you got a chance to check out the card. What were some of your thoughts about that, man?
UFC 160 was held this past weekend. It was a good card. It was very crowd-pleasing. The great undertone of that UFC pay-per-view is that Mike Tyson was in the audience sitting next to Dana White. And for those of you who don't know, Mike Tyson is looked upon in very high regard among any fighter, whether it be MMA, whether it be boxer. Say what you want to say about his past and I'll eat your children and all that stuff. But Mike Tyson is God to a lot of fighters. And it was like they were going out there, a lot of them, to put on a show for a guy who some of them grew up watching, some of them just watched and admired, as a hero to a lot of people, like Glover Teixeira, who had a very impressive submission victory. Junior Dos Santos had a great knockout, a fantastic knockout of Mark Hunt, where he did a spin kick when he was well ahead in the third round of the fight. And then, of course, Cain Velasquez submitting Bigfoot Silva. So a lot of great finishes on this card. A lot of people putting on a show for Mike Tyson, and I really didn't like this card. It's going to set up a rematch between Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez. It's going to be the third time we see them go at it. Boring. They're tied 1-1. It is kind of a boring fight. You saw the first fight. It was very quick. Yeah, Cain Velasquez wasn't 100% for that first fight, so Junior Dos Santos won. Second fight, Cain Velasquez 100% outclassed Junior Dos Santos, and I think it's going to be the same thing again. It's going to be very hum. Cain Velasquez, very businessman-like, against Junior Dos Santos.
I have no interest in watching that fight again. I'd rather see Cain do it than Roy Nelson at this point. Assuming Roy Nelson gets by his Nets fight coming up, I believe the Nets pay-per-view, but don't quote me on that. I'd rather see, you know, two fresh faces as opposed to watching the third match. You know, I was bored enough already watching Velasquez and Silva Part 2. We had this card 1 year ago, roughly, Memorial Day weekend. It wasn't much of a fight then, so just time for something new in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, and speaking of the UFC heavyweight division, like, why does it seem so stagnant right now? I mean, they had that big push, I guess, what was it, 2010, when they did the Ultimate Fighter with the heavyweights, with Kimbo on it, but none of those guys really became stars off of that show.
Nope. Say what you want about Brock Lesnar, but the division sort of took a dive once he left the UFC. I mean, at least Lesnar brought some star power. People were interested to watch Brock Lesnar fight, but, you know, Cain Velasquez is a great fighter, but I don't know how big of a national appeal he has. You know, the casual fan isn't going to get excited for a Cain Velasquez fight the same way he's going to get excited for a Junior Dos Santos fight. So I think they lost a lot of star power when Lesnar left, and I think John Jones will eventually take that spot in the spotlight, the heavyweight division, if he moves up in class.
Yeah, and the same thing could be said about Frank Mir, who maybe he wasn't the greatest fighter in the world, but God, he was a good heel. He knew how to talk up a fight, and he did have some skills. Not a lot of big men know how to do jiu-jitsu the way Frank Mir does, and he used it to his advantage. And I completely agree with you, Marcus, when you're talking about Brock Lesnar leaving huge million buy void. You put Brock Lesnar in a fight, I don't care if he's fighting my grandmother. People are going to pay Brock Lesnar in an octagon because they want to see somebody beat him. But yeah, the heavyweight fight. The thing about Cain Velasquez is the brilliance in Cain is that he does appeal to that Latino community. But other than that, he's not very transcendent. He's a very boring guy. Doesn't know how to talk a lot of trash. He's just very workmanlike. So they need a character in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I'm interested to see, you know, well, besides seeing Brock Lesnar versus Grandmama Nasty, live Vegas.
She's a tough girl, I'm telling you.
What I really am interested in is, you know, how the move to the new Fox channel will affect things. You know, I was telling Marcus before the show, I had a chance to see some of the promos for the UFC studio show with Leanne Tweeden, who keeps getting work for some reason in the world of sports. I mean, she was on the Best Damn Sports Show. She was on the Poker After Dark, and now she's on the UFC show. Hey, I ain't hating. I'm just saying. Chael Sonnen, who I think is a really good fit for that show. And you remember who the other guy was, Marcus? It was Chael Lee.
On the Fox show?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Was it one of the UFC announcers?
He was another fighter.
Oh, is it Kenny Florian?
Yeah, it was Florian Sonnen and Leanne Tweeden.
Okay.
So I think the, you know, that'll be a pretty entertaining show, and I think, you know, the move to the new channel will build some life, and maybe, you know, they'll be able to build some new stars.
I hope so. I mean, and just looking forward to the next card, which I'm not excited about. 161 main event now is Rashad Evans versus Dan Henderson. I mean, yeah. So. We have some time to – you added some fights to kill before you can save your money for 162, which should be interesting. It's going to be Silva and Chris Weidman. Shout out to Chris Weidman, who went to my college, Tufts University. But I think that should be an intriguing main event, and I think Silva's first challenge in a long, long time.
When is the Rousey fight?
Oh, the Rousey fight won't be until later this year. There's not a set date for that.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, it's crazy to say because – you know, she's only been a UFC star for, what, two fights? But she might be the most interesting person outside of Jon Jones in the entire promotion, Alfred.
Absolutely. Interesting and intriguing, especially given her history. And given this, it's very unprecedented to have a woman fight in the UFC, so we're still breaking new ground. And it's only going to make it more interesting and more mainstream with this whole Ultimate Fighter scenario where you're going to have guy and girl fighters in the house. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, that should be crazy, and I'm interested to see how the dynamic works. You know, with the genders mixing, and you know, guys being coached by the women. You know, that should be very interesting to see how Rousey and Zingano do on that show. But we'll step aside from the MMA and finish off segment one with some hockey talk. The East is pretty much settled. We got the conference finals matchup set up between the Penguins and the Bruins, who are still doing work. But the West, fellas, that's kind of what I want to touch on real quick. You know, the Blackhawks and the Red Wings still having a good series, and the Sharks and the Kings going to a Game 7.
Game 7 Tuesday night. I'm not worried as a Kings fan. I think that they have shown that they can win at home during the last stretch of the regular season and now the playoffs. You know, the home team has won the first six games of the series, and I expect the same tomorrow night at Staples Center. As compared to the Chicago Detroit series, which this game's currently going on right now, it's 1-1 at the end of the first period. But you know, Chicago's on the rope. Chicago came in as one of the title favorites, along with Pittsburgh, to win the Stanley Cup, and they could be out after tonight if Detroit can somehow steal this game.
It is the wild, wild west in the battle for California. The thing about the LA Kings and the San Jose Sharks is that the San Jose Sharks, there have been instances where the Kings look like they could win those games in San Jose, but then at home, the Kings just look so much more dominant, so much like a much better team. So I do like the Kings to take that series. And then Chicago fighting for its life. I just really can't believe that the Detroit out in Hockey Town has given it to them like this as a number 7 seed. But I do see Chicago pulling it off somehow, and us seeing another Game 7 in the Western Conference.
Yeah, for me, my picks would be I'm going to stick with Chicago. I think they're a better team, but you know, you got to give Detroit all the credit in the world. That's a veteran organization, and they know how to play in the playoffs. In terms of the Kings and the Sharks, I'm still sticking with the Kings, but I mean, San Jose has really shown up, and if anything, if nothing else, I'd like to see him win just so we can have some idiot announcer, you know, be the first guy out there to say, "Do you know the way to San Jose?" And then say it like he's the first person to ever think of that joke. So Chris Berman used to do that all the time. But I'm not here to talk bad about people, not on Memorial Day.
Save it for next week, then.
That's not what this day is about. I'm not about that life today.
He wasn't a vet. It's all right. He's fair game.
Oh, and on that note, we're going to end segment one. Coming up next, though, he was here last week talking wrestling. This week, he's talking about his brand new show on Spike TV. He's talking about his significant other working for the WWE. And he's talking about great moments in history. And he's really not, but I just wanted to think of something that would rhyme. So coming up next, we got an interview with the one and only Norm Souza. Stick and stay. More Kings of Sport right after this. Welcome back to the podcast that's causing a panic all around the planet. From Boston to Boise, Fargo to Fresno, Orlando to Ontario, and all points in between. You're listening to the Kings of Sport on the Mosaic Podcast Network. We're back on the Kings of Sport. Happy Memorial Day once again, everybody. Hope you are chilling out on the patio, cooking up some brats, tossing back a couple cold ones, whatever your traditions are. If you're at work, hopefully this show will help you get through it. But right now it's time for our weekly interview segment. We always like to bring you somebody new and unique, maybe somebody you haven't heard before. And this week is no different. The only difference is this guest been hanging out with us all week, fellas. Stopped by last week to talk some wrestling, and he hadn't left the couch. So Marcus, let everybody know who's been hanging around with him.
Yeah, so our next guest falls in the category of someone I haven't met yet in person, but I still consider a cool dude, much like the two co-hosts of this podcast. He's a comedian, actor, writer, host of the Cool Dudes podcast, and the co-host of Never Ever Do This at Home, which debuts on Spike TV May 28th at 11 p.m., Mr. Norm Souza. Norm, what's going on, man?
Guys, I've been here for a week. At least give me a glass of water.
We got you. We'll send that water down to you.
Have you remembered my name yet after being here for a week?
Oh,
I don't think he has.
I think he's forgotten you.
What?
It's Atlee.
Are you saying I forgot about Alfred? No, I remember Alfred. What are you talking about?
It's Atlee. Yeah, so welcome to the show. You are someone who I don't know in person, but you're friends with Corey Erdman, who's been on the show. And yes. You did a wrestling podcast up in Canada for The Score.
That's right.
And I've sort of followed your work since then. And now that you have a new TV project that's coming out next week here in the States, it's already been airing in Canada. So how did you and Teddy Wilson get paired to do this show?
Well, Teddy Wilson, my co-host on the show, Never Ever Do This at Home, he works for Space Channel, which is the Canadian equivalent of Sci-Fi. And we've known each other for a long time here in Toronto. He used to be a comedy producer here in the city, and I used to have a sketch group and do stand-up early on in my career. And then we basically, you know, kind of went through the audition process, and the two of us kind of, you know, went in together, and then we met with the production company, and basically that's how that went down. But yeah, I've known him for a long time. He is more of the, you know, comic book Doctor Who. He hosts a show, if you're listening in Canada, he hosts Inner Space on Space Channel, which is a daily, like, sci-fi talk show.
And I went ahead and, since the show doesn't actually premiere in the States until tomorrow night, I went ahead and found an illegal copy. Thanks, Canada, for that. I described the show as sort of Mythbusters meets Jackass. What's been the response to the show so far in Canada in terms of ratings and just from people, you know, stopping you or tweeting you and that kind of reaction?
Yeah, well, it's funny. You know, it's been airing for a couple weeks in Canada now. It premiered, I think, 3 weeks ago, and it's been great. We're actually on the Discovery Channel in Canada, which is funny that we have a show that's on Discovery Channel and then it's also on Spike TV. But, you know, it is just that. It's those two things together. There is a lot of explosions. If you watch the sizzle reel online, you'll see us running from fireballs and you see us doing crazy, stupid things. But there is a lot of science that backs it all up. So it's kind of funny. There's a lot of educational. I learned a lot doing it, and that's, I think, the best part about me and Teddy together is, you know, we're not experts. We're kind of like these dangerously unqualified guys who are in these scientific situations. So we learn as the viewer learns, and we have a lot of fun doing it, and I think the audience does too. The show on Discovery has been great. It debuted the number one show for the channel, and you know, it's tough because we were debuting in Canada against, you know, the Leafs, you know, first playoff game in 9 years, and then the next episode 2, 3, and 4. Because in Canada, the episodes air back-to-back. We were up against Game 7 with Toronto and Boston. But, wow. You know, it didn't really hurt us, and we did really great. And people seem to be enjoying it. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
I'm watching a trailer right now. This is incredible. The stuff blowing up. You got firefighters. You've got clowns, slow motion, and fireballs. Is this as fun as it looks?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, we shot 90 experiments in the span of 2 months. So, you know, after a while, you know, it certainly gets to you. It is a long day, but yeah, you know, especially when you're waking up at 5 a.m., well, but nothing wakes you up faster than running from a huge fireball. And yeah, if you watch that trailer, you can usually, when we're running from fire, you can also hear us, like, you know, laughing and having a good time. We can do that because on set at all times there are those firefighters. We had EMTs. We had a full special effects and safety team there. So all that chaos that you see is very controlled, and it was very safe.
So have there been any incidents? Have you gotten hurt? Anybody gotten hurt?
Well, I guess, you know, kind of hurt. I had a couple things. I had a car windshield hit me in the back. I had a toaster smashing me in the face. I got into a car accident on set, which is kind of funny. I'll explain that one. we do an experiment where Teddy, my co-host, him and the special effects team rig up a full-size sedan to operate like a remote control car. And we thought it'd be fun just to kind of go do a little obstacle course in front of the house. And so I jump in the back seat of the car, and One of the wheel axles on the car breaks, and Teddy loses control of it, and it smashes into a tree going about, like, 50 miles an hour. So, that was the closest thing to a major injury that we've had. We had one of our producers had their eyebrows singed with fire, but, you're going to get that sort of thing on a show like that. But thank goodness my insurance policy was like, it was a roof.
First, I got to get one point out of the way, Norm, before I ask you again about the show. But I wish I would have met you earlier. We could have connected earlier because my ex loved the Space Channel. And maybe maybe if I could have hooked up with you and Teddy, we'd still be something.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. You know what? Give her a call. We'll make it a missed connection. Me and Teddy will show up. We'll have, like, Spanish guitars. We'll serenade. We'll rekindle the love.
And then we'll blow them up.
Yeah. You want to talk about explosions? You see some explosions then, brother. You will.
No, I don't even want to ask. I don't
want to know what kind of
explosions. No, I'm talking about my ex had a wonderful temper, let's just say.
So, yeah, that's what I was talking about.
I don't know. Vanderberg, come on, man. Get with the program.
Sorry.
One of the things that interests me about you is you got an extensive background with sketch comedy. And yeah. I just was wondering, in terms of the show that you're doing now with Teddy, how do you take anything from your sketch comedy background and apply it to the show, or is it just two separate animals?
Well, no, absolutely. Like, I come from, Toronto and Canada in general, but Toronto specifically has a rich history in sketch comedy and improv, and, I'm definitely a product of that. The good thing about a show like this is these experiments are pretty unpredictable, so we can't really, have a script, So we were able to improv a lot, and we didn't necessarily know what was going to happen, and it is quite funny, especially experiments where we have to wait. We have to come up with material, so that improv sketch background is definitely was good for coming up with jokes on the fly while waiting for a propane tank to explode or something like that, it definitely helped. I know traditionally to have comedians performing a science show is a little rare, but I think it really works in this case.
Some people might not know that you have a sort of high-profile girlfriend, Renee Young of the WWE. news to you, I know. It's a surprise.
Really.
What's it been like sort of watching her career blossom in WWE, especially when you follow the product?
It's been great. Like, Renee and I, we live in New York now. We've worked together since the SCORE days. And it's great, especially seeing someone working on a worldwide scale with a company that you followed your entire life. It's exciting and it's a lot of work. And it's really weird. She's interviewing professional wrestlers all day, and I'm running from fireballs all day, and then we still just hang out and watch movies. So. Yeah, it's the two of us are living very interesting lives, for sure.
You ever wonder if she'll send you subliminal shots while doing a job with the WWE? Like, maybe the Shield just has a match. She's like, the Shield are making a splash in the WWE. Speaking of making a splash, somebody forgot to do the dishes last night.
Yeah.
I know that was a brilliant impression of Renee.
Yeah.
She sounds exactly like a sassy black woman.
I did wake up to a figure four the other day, so yeah, maybe it's not so subliminal.
Did she lean on you at all for advice or any types of tidbits that you might want to know about wrestlers to where you help her out a little bit?
No, she holds her own. She knows more about professional wrestling than I do, for sure. She's one of the most professional people I've ever met. So I think we worked together at the SCORE, I was her writer, and I co-host on The Break, which is a web series that we did back there. And that's it. There's nothing that I could teach her about wrestling. She's one of the most what's the word? I don't want to say it's better than educated. She's a real expert genius. In the product, I guess. What was that?
Aficionado.
I'm a genius.
Aficionado. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
Aficionado.
Yeah. Yeah. She knows what's up.
You mentioned moving from Toronto to New York. What's that transition been like? I lived in New York for 5 years, and I know from coming from LA to New York, it was an adjustment. I can only imagine coming from Toronto to New York, what that's been like for you.
Well, Toronto's actually really similar. You know, it's just New York is about 20 times the size, so there is the population thing. But yeah, entertainment-wise, it's on a much larger scale, but, you know, the weather is very similar, the buildings are very similar, the multicultural parts of the city are really similar, so it actually hasn't been that difficult. It is a little weird to have sports teams actually do well and make the playoffs, so, you know, I think that's the only difference, you know, going to Yankees games and Mets games as opposed to watching, you know, the Blue Jays lose at the Sky Dome, you know. But, yeah, other than that, it's been really close. I do miss Toronto a ton, but New York's a great city. I love it.
Yeah, there's a slight difference between the Knicks and the Raptors.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Well,
yeah. Same amount of championships in the last 10 years.
Pardon me?
Same amount of championships in the last 10 years.
Yeah, zero.
Yeah, zero. But you know, don't even begin to debate the Knicks' hardships compared to the hardships of the Toronto Maple Leafs, because you will lose that one.
Yeah, what did you think of the reaction? Just you know, we were talking a week or so ago, the three of us, about the reaction from the Toronto fans after that loss, after that collapse against the Bruins. What did you make of that, Norm?
You know, it's tough because, you know, you go through the seven stages of grief, really. But, you know, ultimately, it was one of the biggest meltdowns in playoff history of any sports team. But at the same time, you know, the Leafs overachieved this year, and no one thought that they were going to make the playoffs. So, you know, taking Boston to a Game 7 alone was more than anyone had expected. So I don't think Leafs fans can really be too disappointed with how the season went. It's just really unbelievable that it happened to go down the way it did in the last, you know, moments of that game. It was a crushing loss, but, you know, I think if you lost any game, I think if you lost game four like that, it would have been devastating. It just is unfortunate that it happened to be in a game seven. But definitely I would take that same loss with the Leafs making the playoffs and the Leafs not making the playoffs like they did the 9 years before.
Well, at least after that loss, the Canadians were able to find some comfort with never ever do this at home.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, that's the thing. I didn't even in Canada that game was airing the exact same time that my show was airing, so I didn't even get to watch. I was having a great time tweeting my show. So, yeah, I got some great comfort in the fact that, you know, the exploding freight train that is the Toronto Maple Leafs. I actually get to run from an exploding freight train.
Oh, it's been awesome talking to you, Norm, and it was great talking to you again last week when you stopped by to talk wrestling with us. But, you know, can you let the listeners know where they can follow you, how they can keep up with you and your work, and also, you know, when they can catch your show on Spike, where we're sure it will be the new number one rated show, even jumping over my beloved Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, it is Tuesdays at 11, starting May 28th, which is tomorrow, actually. So tomorrow, Tuesday, May 28th at 11 p.m. on Spike TV, you can follow me at Norm Zuzza. You can follow the show at Never Ever At Home. And if you want to dabble in some wrestling tweets of mine, you can catch me at Hacksaw Jim Duggan. But, yeah, if you want to get some stuff, there's a SpikeTV.com/Never Ever Do This At Home. You can check out for all the times, and there's clips, and you can see us. You can see slow-mo fireballs and all that stuff.
Good stuff. Thanks again for the time, brother. You know, you always got an open invitation with the Kings, and maybe next time we'll find some water for you.
Alfred, Nate, Marcus, you guys are the best. Your podcast is the best.
I didn't like that. I went first this time.
Yeah, you came up first, Alfred. I got you this time, man.
By the way, Norm, can you plug your podcast, by the way?
Oh, of course, yeah. You can listen to my podcast, which is the Cool Dudes Podcast. If you just go into iTunes and search Cool Dudes Podcast, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbeam, Tumblr, all the stuff. But yeah, we do wrestling, music, pop culture, television, all kinds of stuff. So yeah, check that out, please.
Sweet. Definitely check that podcast out. I mean, you're on iTunes anyway. You're on Stitcher anyway. You listen to this show. Go ahead and check out Norm's show as well. You won't be disappointed. But that was Norm Souza. We are the Kings of Sports. And we'll be back with more shows right after this.
Are you tired of the same old, same old? Do you want to break away from the herd? Do you need a change from all the other vanilla sports talk shows out there? Well, you come to the right place. It's the Kings of Sport, a new flavor in the world of sports talk. It's a place where you hear fresh takes on the hottest topics.
Now, this is a glimpse into the Lakers' future, and Paul Gasol, like you said, has been peaking, and it's only been over the past couple of weeks. So I feel like, as bad as it is that Kobe's hurt, the Lakers may be at a competitive advantage when it comes to making the playoffs. Not a lot of film out there on this Laker team.
That's a little bit of wishful thinking, thinking they'll be better off without Kobe, but I do think that this is an opportunity for Dwight, and especially Powell, who has kind of come on at the last quarter of the season. You know, it's like, where was this guy all along? Maybe it took this long for him to kind of gel with D'Antoni's style, but the Powell we're seeing right now is a guy that is playing at an all-star level. You know, you see just the variety of moves he has around the basket and the deft passing that he's always had.
You'll hear the coolest guests.
The whole idea of these people who were so adamant that Tiger needed to turn himself in, I just had all kinds of questions about how they felt about Tiger Woods. Like, that's just what you couldn't help but go back to, because that's ridiculous. I don't care how much golf is supposed to be based on this gentleman's game and honor and da-da-da and everybody else and everybody talking this noise. Look, man, I play golf with people. They be out here cheap all the time. I got a buddy that was on the internet, on Twitter, going hard, super-duper moralistic about this. He cheats at golf all the time. I have watched him cheat at golf. He cheats. He is cheating at golf playing with me, and I stink. Like, there wasn't even any competition in this. But out here on this, Tiger needs to go home. That's ridiculous. Ain't nobody going to do that.
And you'll hear discussions you won't hear anywhere else.
Like, this is the Black Panther. He's the king of Wakanda. He's one of your prominent black superheroes, and he goes out like that. What's your thoughts on that, Mark?
You said comments, right? Just like Star Trek last week. I wasn't here for that.
You know,
I'm not about that life.
And we have a new champion, and he is representing the great country of Australia. Well, I guess Australia's a continent, isn't it?
Uh-oh.
It's a country and a continent.
Oh, no.
I believe so.
It's a continent.
It's a country and a continent, though. I guess the only country that's a continent and vice versa.
We should know these things.
We should. you know, I just want to let everybody know that the Kings of Sport loves everybody. We don't discriminate on the basis of race, religion, sexual orientation, nothing like that. But there are some things that brothers need to be a little bit more careful about than our Caucasian companions. Some things, brothers, if you're not used to doing it, maybe you should practice first. Things like riding horses. Things like riding jet skis. Taking trips in hot air balloons. Shout out to Dante Stallworth.
And especially riding ATVs in the offseason when you just finished signing the richest contract ever.
The Kings of Sport, a new weekly podcast available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Are you down with the Kings?
And now it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sports on a great Memorial Day, closing out on Memorial Day weekend. Of course, we always want to give a shout-out to the men and women that have given their lives for this country in our armed services. So, you know, again, big shout-out to our military. And, you know, you may not support the wars. You may not support the decisions of government, but you always got to support the troops, man, because they are some brave men and women. So we're going to go from that to the Ringside Wrap, because that's what you're here for. Got to give the people what they want. Got to give the people what they need. And the WWE gave us something very interesting this past Monday on Raw. And a gentleman that you may know as Michael McGillicuddy. You may know him as Joe. Or now you may know him by the name of Curtis Axel. Brother Alfred, what did you think about that reveal? And where do you think this character's going to go?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nate. I was sleeping because you noticed you mentioned Brother Curtis Axel, and, you know, boring. I don't care. Let me tell you something. A lot of people are getting a little too giddy about Curtis Axel because he's a quote-unquote Paul Heyman guy. You put a guy on Paul Heyman, you twerk his name around a little bit. You put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. Yeah, his dad was incredible. He was a legend. But his son isn't. I mean, his son doesn't really have the potential to me to be great. And the thing I don't like about Curtis Axel is that we've already seen this movie. He was Michael McGillicuddy. He was in a forgettable tag team with David Otunga. He didn't show any potential then. What makes people think he's going to have it now? And they say, oh, well, he's with Paul Heyman. These Paul Heyman guys like Stone Cold Steve Austin, CM Punk, even Brock Lesnar, you got to meet Paul Heyman halfway because at least they had some talent. And they had some it factor that I don't think Michael McGillicuddy has.
He's as much as a Paul Heyman guy as he is a Rock guy. You know, The Rock has trained with Joe / Hurt Axel, whatever you want to call him. The last WrestleMania is leading up to, he's worked with Curtis Axel in the ring. And The Rock has raved about his in-ring talent. You know, I wasn't too blown away by his debut or re-debut last week. The problem with him is his father has set this legacy so high that, you know, when I think the son of Mr. Perfect, I think Dolph Ziggler. I don't think Curtis Axel. And because he is so dry and so much bigger than his father was, I just can't really get into this character despite having Paul Heyman is on his side.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm a Paul Heyman fan, but, you know, let's be real when we talk about Paul Heyman. I mean, he is a great promo, a great wrestling mind, but everything Paul Heyman touches isn't gold, folks. I mean, sure, he's done a great job with CM Punk, a great job with Brock Lesnar, a great job back in the day, you know, managing people like Benjamin and Hayes, managing people like RVD. But he's also the same Paul Heyman that managed Nathan Jones, that managed Heidenreich, that managed Test, that managed A-Train, you know what I'm saying? That managed
Matt Morgan in the WWE.
Yeah, Matt Morgan in the WWE. That managed Adrian Adonis and Colonel De Beers. You know, these are not household names. So just because you put Paul Heyman next to these guys doesn't mean that they're going to be a star. I mean, I think that Henning or McGillicuddy, whatever you want to call them, Axel. And first of all, for the record, there's only one Axel of two Axels in my world, and one is Axel Rose, and the other is Axel Foley from Beverly Hills Cop. Curtis Axel is not even on that list. Curtis Axel wouldn't make my top five list of favorite Axels, and I've only got two Axels on the list. But you know, I don't see him being a star. I see him being a decent mid-carder, but I don't really see much potential. I mean, I'm sure he's got potential if he's presented the right way, but you know, I don't think he's going to go far.
as currently packaged. I think the name is kind of weak, even though I understand it's a tip of the cap to his father and his grandfather. But I don't really see Star on the guy right now, Alfred.
Yeah, Axel Stone from Streets of Rage is also a guy who needs to be on that list. But no, yeah, I'm completely with you, Nate. You made some great points. Paul Heyman has had some duds. And the thing about Paul Heyman, he is great. But you need to have a guy who's got some kind of it factor, who has something that people see in him to where Paul Heyman could bring that out of him. I don't know if there's anything to bring out of Curtis Axel other than some sleeping pills.
And if they wanted to make him a star, they would have put him over Triple H. Instead, Triple H became the focus of that match with his whole concussion angle. So that just shows you already that they're not really 100% behind this guy, that they put him in his first match after his comeback, and it turned into a no contest because Triple H decided to, you know, pass out or whatever he did.
I mean, that's the thing, you know. I mean, we're going to talk about TNA in a little bit, but, you know, kind of put a bow on this Curtis Axel story that everybody's like, oh, Triple H put him over. Triple H did such a great job helping this kid out. At the end of the day, anybody that watched that show does not come away with the idea that Curtis Axel beat Triple H. They come away with the idea of, what's going on with Triple H? What's Triple H going to do to come back from this? It's all about Hunter in this situation.
And you know, in a month, are people going to remember this match? Is it against Curtis Axel?
No. So, really, this is just kind of like a footnote to, you know, Lesnar and Triple H, because it still seems like, even though that feud is kind of cooled off or kind of been closed, that's still a bigger story than Axel and Triple H. So let's go from there to the world of TNA, the McDowells to WWE's McDonald's. We need to get that copywritten, because I think that is the most brilliant TNA analogy ever. But we got a big pay-per-view coming up here, Slammiversary from Beantown. We're going to see if this pay-per-view can be Boston Strong, the card. I think on paper, the card looks pretty good. You got Sting and Bully Ray at the top, AJ Styles and Kurt Angle. You got a big tag team four-way, and then the X Division match. You know, even though I hate Suicide being in there, I think Kenny King and Chris Sabin can do some work, Alfred.
Yeah, and this looks like a very good wrestling card. I know a lot of people may be down on Sting and Bully Ray in the main event, but I really think there's a lot of good to like about this card, especially the AJ Styles angle is picking up steam. I really did like what they did on Impact, where they kind of tease will he or won't he, and at the last minute when it seemed like he actually was going to join Aces and Eights, he goes his own way. A lot of people complaining that this was done in 1997 with Sting. So was the NWO, and they love the Shield, which is basically the same thing. So settle down. Wrestling always continues to copy itself. And as long as the execution is there, which I think it kind of is with the AJ angle, I think they're on the right track.
I'm pretty lukewarm about this card. I'm actually more curious to see the reaction in Boston and what the crowd is like for TNA compared to WWE. The main event, I have no interest in. You know, with that said, though, I'm not sure who's going to win this match. I think they're leaning towards putting the title on Sting and setting up Bully Ray and Hogan for God knows why. So I am interested to see the result, but actually sitting through a 20-minute match between these two, I have no interest.
Yeah, that's a bad move, in my opinion. I'm one of the biggest Sting fans you can find, but you know, at this point in his career, he should not be the champion of TNA. I think it hurts the Ace and Eights angle if you put him over Bully Ray at this point. I really think the story has got to be moving forward, you know, AJ Styles and Bully Ray eventually at Bound for Glory. You know, I think that's the AJ stuff this past week on Impact I thought was really well done. You know, we all knew that AJ was going to not side with the Aces and Eights, but the way they kept drawing that reveal and resolution out was pretty well done. So I think, you know, Slammiversary is going to be interesting to see how that crowd reacts, but also to see, you know, AJ's wrestling a little bit of a different style. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what he and Angle can do, Alfred.
Yeah, I think AJ Styles and Kurt Angle is going to be an awesome wrestling contest from an in-ring standpoint. Kurt Angle can still go. He may be banged up. He may not be what he was in his prime, but Kurt Angle outside his prime is better than probably 80% of wrestlers inside of their prime, and then AJ Styles is just AJ Styles. And also, the storyline aspect of this should be very good, too, because we still don't know where AJ Styles stands. I know he's a vigilante by himself, but we could see some developments in where he stands by the end of this match.
And let's not forget Kurt Angle single-handedly saved Olympic wrestling if you listen to TNA.
They want you to believe.
But on that note, we're going to end up the ringside wrap for this week. Really looking forward to Slammiversary, and really looking forward to a conversation with Court Bauer that we are going to have coming up, Brother Alfred. Let the people know about that real quick.
Court Bauer will be on the show June 3rd. It's going to be an amazing show. We've teased it before. I did call out Court Bauer to a gentlemanly debate about The Rock. We do not see eye to eye on a certain aspect of The Rock and his WWE comeback. So that should be fun. And he's going to hang around and talk wrestling with us. A great writer, Court Bauer, used to be on the WWE creative team, and he'll be here with the Kings of Sport.
And I'm looking forward to that, you know, not only to have that discussion about The Rock, but I was a big fan of MLW, you know, promotion that Court was very instrumental in back in the day. And another great podcast besides ours is MLW Radio with Court and Conan. And Conan is just, if you haven't heard him, you owe it to yourself to go download an episode of MLW Radio right now, because it is quality stuff, guys. So with that being said, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more of the Kings of Sport. You know what's coming up next? Segment 4. More Kings of Sport right after this. Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Sports talk for our generation. Hope of the world is in our generation. It's all left up to us to change this present situation. Take a lesson from our elders. Don't make the same mistake. Let's fill the world with love and get rid of all the hate. And we are back on the Kings of Sport. You know what time it is, folks. It is time for the often imitated but never, ever duplicated segment 4, where we give you all the hottest topics in the world of sports, the world of music, pop culture, entertainment, all that good stuff. If it's, you know, if it's trending, if it's hot, if it's what's going on in the streets, we're talking about it. But we're not talking about everything going on in the streets, because we're not about that life. But we are going to start it off talking about somebody who has seen better days, and that is one Miss Amanda Bynes, brother Marcus. Let the people know.
Yeah, so Amanda Bynes, she has been in the news for the better part of this 2013, but I think she finally hit rock bottom this past week when she was arrested in New York. So her apartment, her neighbor in her building saw Amanda smoking a joint in the lobby. And of course, this neighbor having no class and not knowing the code, called the cops on her, snitched, and called the cops. Cops show
Stop
up.
Snitching.
Yeah, exactly.
Snitches get stitches.
The cops showed up and, you know, asked her about the bomb that was in her apartment. And she ended up tossing the bomb out the window out of her apartment building and landed on the street. So she was arrested for reckless endangerment, possession of marijuana, and tampering of evidence. So she appears in court the next day wearing this wig that looks like, you know, if Cousin It had a blonde wig and put it on. It's pretty remarkable what she wore to court. And since then, she's gone on a few Twitter rants, one about Rihanna that she claims was now faked. It wasn't her, but she basically, you know, said that she had what was coming when it came to Chris Brown in terms of getting beat. So she sat quite the week. And, you know, I guess the cops did a 51-50 on her, which the cops weren't buying. So, you know, in their eyes, that she's mentally fit. And she's just, I don't know what she's up to. But, yeah, Amanda Bynes, she's
Now, Amanda also said that she's allergic to drugs and alcohol as a defense for her alleged actions, which may explain why she looks the way she does these days with her kind of bloated face and all that crazy stuff.
Hey, Alfred, weed is not a drug. It's just a plant that grows that way. And if you should happen to put some fire up to it, there are some effects.
Complete coincidence.
But my favorite part is, you know, I guess, you know, the transcript said from her court appearance when the judge was like, Amanda Bynes, she was like, that's me.
That is under oath.
But no, man, this is crazy because is it just me? Has she, like, taken Lindsay Lohan out the top crazy white chick spot?
Oh, she has. Lindsay's off in rehab doing her time, doing her 90 days, and now Amanda Bynes is like, all right, this is my time.
Like, it was Paris Hilton, then it was Lindsay Lohan, now Amanda Bynes is like, your time is up, my time is now.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's like one of those pound-for-pound discussions like they had in boxing or MMA where one guy wins, and you're like, oh, that guy's the best in the world right now. But then a couple months later, the other guy fights, and he wins, and they say, no, that guy's the best in the world. It's like, they have to one-up each other, so next time we hear about Lindsay Lohan doing something crazy, she'll take the spot, but for now, it does belong to Amanda Bynes.
Well, I think one of the things that intrigues me, I was looking at her Wikipedia page before the show. And first of all, Wikipedia people, y'all need to be truthful because y'all got a picture up here from 2009 and she don't even look like that no more. So I'm going to need Wikipedia to be truthful. But the second thing is she's retired from acting twice. I did not know this. It says here June 2010, she stated that I don't love acting anymore, so I've stopped doing it. I'm retiring. Then a month later, she unretired. And then in 2012, she said she's once again retired. She's going to focus on launching a career as a fashion designer. And to me, it sounds like some Brian Urlacher stuff. Like, I'm retired, but I'm still here if anybody wants me. Oh, y'all don't want me?
Cool, right, I'm out sorry. Then.
Yeah. I'm out.
Well, one time, Amanda Bynes retired from acting. And then the next time, acting retired Amanda Bynes.
Mm. Exactly.
I'm looking at her, like, her credits. The only thing I've seen that Amanda Bynes has done in the last 5 years is Hairspray, and that was in 2007. So that's like 6 years ago.
She can use a bit of Hairspray in these pictures. I'll tell you that.
Oh, she is just a hot mess, and she is what was the thing she said about Drake? Like, she's in the black dudes.
Yeah, she wanted Drake to murder her vagina.
Oh.
Oh, well, according to some people, he's already murdered hip hop. So,
what's another felony?
Yeah. Oh man, Amanda Bynes. Well,
I didn't know white people could have nappy hair.
Oh, I know some white people with nappy hair. I mean, you know, nap knows no race.
It doesn't discriminate.
No, nap does not discriminate. Oh, but Amanda Bynes, I mean, that's ridiculous. She's kind of a train wreck right now, but I think we're talking about, you know, great train wrecks over the years. To me, one of the all-time great train wrecks is another guy that's been in the news recently, and that is one Senor Jose Canseco. And I don't even know why I put the Senor on there. Maybe that was like a subtle mental racist thing.
He's Latino.
I'm sorry, my Latino people out there. I didn't mean to throw that out there. But what's been going on with Jose lately, man?
Yeah, so Jose on Twitter earlier this week, he just let out a tweet that said, oh, by the way, I was charged with rape.
Mm.
And it stemmed from an incident in his now hometown of Las Vegas, and he went on to take a polygraph test to prove his innocence. Mind you, this happened, so after this tweet came out, which was, I believe, Tuesday, Wednesday he went down to Texas and he played an independent league baseball game because he's still trying to keep his career going at the age of, I think, 47 to 48.
He's not retired. He's just, you know, here in the office, he's not retired.
Yeah. So, he's 48. So he played in both games of a doubleheader, in Texas. And then he went ahead and took this polygraph test that he claims he passed, you know. I tend to side with Jose on this. I feel like, you know, he's crazy, but he's not.
He's not rape
he's
crazy.
Not, he's not a threat to society in terms of women and raping and all that stuff. He's just out there. He's looking for something to do. When he's not, you know, trying to call out Shaq or try to revive his MLB career. He's just a guy on Twitter that you need to follow because you don't know what he's going to say. And
yeah, he proved it this week. Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
It's like some Jerry Springer stuff every single tweet. And it's one of those tweets like a guilty pleasure Twitter account that you just need to follow and see what kind of crazy trouble he's getting himself into now.
I think one of the things I used to follow him, I guess it was earlier this year, maybe late last year when he was going through some stuff with his girlfriend or his fiance. I don't know what she is. I don't even know if they're together, but
probably
he was just like
now, yeah.
Yeah, probably his ex now. But my man would just go out there and just say stuff about her and then come back like 10 minutes later. Like 10 minutes in the previous statement, he was like, I hate her. She's cheated on me and deceived me in the way that no one else could. Then 10 minutes later, she's the most caring, wonderful person in the world. I'm like, you know, I like, you know, given my recent history, I know I got, you know, some issues with mental stability sometimes every now and then. But Jose didn't take it to a whole another level. Like he put, I think one day he started putting, he opened it up for fans to talk to him, and he had a like 20 tweet conversation with this one guy going back and forth arguing. He's like, I'll tell you why I'm not a loser fan, because I hit all these home runs and I got money and that's why I'm not a loser. So what do you have to say to that? And it was just like, come on, man. Why are you even entertaining these people, man?
It's exactly what they want.
I think he might be crazy like a fox, though, because, you know, he does just enough to keep us talking about him, but he doesn't do too much so that he's ends up like Amanda Bynes.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, remember, he was the main guy who said, look, these guys are using steroids, and
exactly.
you should believe me, and he turned out to be correct. So,
yeah, I was going to say, he still got some credibility from those days when he wrote those books exposing the steroid scandal in baseball. And so, you know, as crazy as he may seem, he will always have that type of credibility.
You know what? You know what, though? I think I may have solved the case. It just occurred to me, like, if these allegations are true, like we said, Jose is crazy, but he's not rape crazy. Now, Ozzy, on the other hand, you ain't. When the last time you seen Ozzy Canseco?
That is a good point.
I'm just saying. Ozzy, we looking for you, dog.
Come on the podcast. We'll have you on.
Yes, come clear your name, Ozzy Canseco. Or Jose. Jose, you can come on too, dog.
I'm sure if we tweet him, we could probably get a response at least.
It's going to be a 20 back and forth type thing.
And that could be the interview. We'll just get a Jose Canseco impersonator to read in his voice. This is a great idea, so I'm going to work on that after the show. But we want to wrap up segment four like we do each and every week with the King for a Week Award. Of course, week one, the award went to Charles Ramsey, the hero of Cleveland. Last week, the award went to Miguel for the leg drop of all leg drops. And Brother Vandenberg, this week's award winner is not as hilarious as those first two choices, but he is... He's doing good work, just the same.
Yeah, so following the tragic tornadoes in Moore, Oklahoma, this past Monday, Kevin Durant of the Oklahoma City Thunder stepped up to the plate and donated $1 million to the relief fund, which was also matched by the Thunder and the NBA Players Union. So it generated $3 million for support. And even though Oklahoma City is not Durant's hometown, it's where he's been since Seattle moved the franchise to Oklahoma City. And he felt a special connection to the city and decided to do his part. The funny thing is that, you know, Matt Kemp made a similar pledge where he said he was going to donate $1,000 for every home run he's hit. $1,000 for every home run he's hitting before the All-Star break. Matt Kemp set 2 home runs this year. So, of course, when Matt tweeted this out, he generated a lot of backlash and response about, oh, you just got paid $20 million. That's the most you can donate. So Matt was pressured to donate another $250,000. So, yeah. But Kevin Durant, though, stepping up to the plate without any questions or any ties to his three-pointer, he just say, hey, here's $1 million, you know, best of luck to more Oklahoma and the recovery. So that makes him our king for the week, Kevin Durant.
Yeah, Oklahoma City's favorite son. And when you think of something like this, Kevin Durant is such a nice guy that now there's questions about whether or not he's a great closer all of a sudden. Without Russell Westbrook, the better or a different team, it seems like they kind of lost that killer instinct that Westbrook does have and Durant doesn't. But it does stem from the fact that Kevin Durant's just an all-around nice guy. He's a legit nice guy who is very caring about the stuff that happens around him, especially when something as horrible as what happened to Oklahoma City.
And, you know, it might be a little bit cliche, might be a little bit corny, but, you know, we've seen Durant make some great assists on the court, but I think this is, you know, probably his biggest assist of this year.
Oh, God, brother Zay.
Hey, I'm a professional broadcaster. That's what we do.
I love it.
I'm sure I'm not the first person to make that correlation, but if I am, I want credit for it. Media people out there in the media. But yeah, to me, I think it's a great thing. I even think what Kemp did is great. You know, he was coming from a good place, but I mean, you know, it I could see why people were like, yeah, well, what's the deal with the $1,000 per home run when you only got two? Yeah. But I think it's really cool that Durant is a part of the community and so in integral to that community. And I think the NBA, you know, sometimes the players kind of get a bad rap of being these thugs or these prima donnas. But the NBA, especially with the NBA Cares program and some of the stuff they do for the kids in school and things like that, they are really one of the leagues that is in the forefront of that community relation, that community outreach. So I think a well-deserved choice for our king for a week this week.
Totally agree. Just a class guy. And hopefully this will sort of get some of the stink that he left by Oklahoma City's early departure, that, you know, this way they can focus on the good things, and then we can get towards next year when Westbrook's back and see what they can do on the court.
Well, we shall see what they do in the court, Kevin Durant and those boys. But again, Kevin Durant, our king for a week. So congratulations, Kevin. Great job for what you've done. And we're going to come back in just a moment to wrap up the show, to close up shop with this week's list. We got a great topic in honor of Memorial Day, and we're going to give it to you. Coming up next, stick around. We got more Kings of Sports right after this.
And now it's time to return to the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time.
It's the Kings of Sports, thekingsofsport.com.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport, closing up shop for another week. A great, great Memorial Day show. Great Memorial Day weekend. Hope you're out there having fun with your family and your friends and doing it big. And we're glad we could be a part of that weekend for you. But we got to wrap things up as we do each and every week with the list. We got a great topic for this week's list. But before we do that, we kind of forgot the feedback for last week, and I know you guys, you know, listen to the show and you want your voice to be heard, so we're not going to neglect that feedback. And last week's topic was your favorite hip-hop side hustle. So, Brother Marcus, I believe we had some responses on Twitter.
We did. Twitter handle ARD Neely said Memphis Bleach Shampoo, which I've never heard of.
I've never heard that either.
Master P, I Got the Hookup. a BET classic. And Paul Wall's Grill and Jewelry Store, which is very successful, actually.
There you go.
And then also we have Jack TWD Fourth,
who said, I believe it's Jack Pisco.
Oh, Jack Pisco, okay. Snoop Lion, Snoop DeVilcar, 50 Cent's Vitamin Water, which I listed, and Birdman's yep. Oil and Gas Company, which I didn't know about.
What happened to that oil? Oh, those are all good answers. I haven't heard of Memphis Bleak shampoo. I'm gonna have to look that up after the show.
I don't want to know what's in the shampoo for Memphis Bleak.
Wasted potential.
Oh, hashtag shots fired.
Wow.
Brother Alfred, we had some Facebook responses for that question as well.
Yes, we did. As always, Terry Hall says, Run's House, Rev Run, had a few seasons of this for a side hustle. He's also a preacher. And then our friend Scott McCulloch said, well, I mean, Pimp My Ride was a classic. I always laugh when they play that heavy bass beat when X walked up to the person's house. My other favorite, which is recent, and I got some flack from people, but Man with the Iron Fist was a very enjoyable kung fu movie reminiscent of some of my favorites like Five Deadly Venoms. And Snoop's porn career can never be forgotten.
Yes, it can.
Yeah, I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Of course, Man in the Iron Fist, in reference to the RZA, who I believe directed that movie as well as started it. It's a very good soundtrack as well to the Man with an Iron Fist. I think a very overachieving kung fu movie. So I'm with Scott on that one.
I hadn't seen that one, but I do know the RZA does a lot of scores for movies. He did the Blade Trinity score as well as worked on the soundtrack. So, yeah, he's definitely out there getting his side hustle on. So thank you for your feedback for last week's topic. But this week we got a brand new topic with a lot of responses. And this topic this week, in honor of Memorial Day, a day that, you know, we remember those that have given their lives in service to this country, but also give respect and honor to the veterans that are actively serving and our active servicemen and women. I wanted to go with a topic that's kind of out there, maybe a little bit different. Your favorite sports veteran. And I'm not talking about, you know, the superstars. I want the rank and file. I want guys that maybe, you know, it's been a favorite player that you followed for years on your team. And the only criteria I had was the guy had to play at least 10 years in whatever sport it was, and he had to be somebody memorable. So with that being said, I know we got some good answers around here in the room. Let's start with Brother Big Nasty. Let's hear your list.
Well, before the show, we kicked this around, and I know you wanted the rank and file, Nate, and guys who may have been a little more obscure than a superstar, but I begged and pleaded, and you were gracious enough to let me include at least one pretty notable name on this list. And that man will start this list off at number one, Brett Favre of my Green Bay Packers. That's right, the greatest Packer of all time for now. He didn't lead the Packers to back-to-back Super Bowls, winning one. And a lot of people, they don't want to talk about this, but the Cowboys were the team in the 90s, and they kept the Packers out of quite a few Super Bowls, as did Brett Favre, let's be honest, including that dastardly play on the last play of the 2008 NFC Championship game against the New York Giants, where he threw an interception on January 20th, 2008, which still registers to me as the worst day of my entire life. But Brett Favre broke most relevant passing records as a Green Bay Packer, including Dan Marino's touchdown record that they thought would never be broken. And he just had a hell of a career. So fun to watch. Interceptions be damned. He will go down as one of the 10 best quarterbacks of all time. Now we go to number two. Now we're talking a little more rank and file, right? So I'm going to go with Brett Favre of the Minnesota Vikings at number two. That's right. 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions one season, his first season back with the Minnesota Vikings. He came back and he stuck it to the Green Bay Packers organization that he felt did him wrong. He also threw his 500th touchdown pass to Randy Moss as a Minnesota Viking. Of course, those weren't as good of days, and he came within one play of going to the Super Bowl with the Minnesota Vikings. So Brett Favre in the Minnesota Vikings, you know, more of a workman-like type player. He wasn't the best player on that team. Adrian Peterson was the best player on that team. They had some stars, and he was just a piece trying to get another ring before he retired. So Brett Favre is a Minnesota Viking. And then we got number three. And we're going to go with Brett Favre and the New York Jets. You know, history isn't going to be very kind to Brett Favre's run as a New York Jet, as Broadway Brett. But let's not forget, we cannot forget the fact that Brett Favre went 8-3. He led that team to an 8-3 record before he hurt his arm and it was shot. He had that great win against the New England Patriots in overtime. They looked like the best team in the AFC. And then Favre basically suffered a severe arm injury that constituted into a slide where the Jets finished 9-7 and missed the playoffs. He had surgery in the offseason and came back to play a great season like we were talking about earlier with the Minnesota Vikings, 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. So Brett Favre, as a New York Jet, my number three veteran, Brother Nate.
You want to start first or should I, Marcus?
You're such a troll. I give you A for creativity, but an F for the list itself.
it's one veteran who's a superstar like we agreed to. And is Brett Favre not a veteran? Brett Favre is a different guy on the Jets and the Vikings than he was on the Packers. He was a superstar on the Packers. Vikings, Jets, he's just doing his thing.
The only passes he completed as a Jet were dirty, sending dirty text messages.
Oh, no. Allegedly, brother. Mm. I mean, he agreed to some of it, but not all of it.
Like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just an old gunslinger. Pew, pew, pew. Look at my penis.
Brett Favre's penis would have been number 4. How'd we have next?
I was wondering where that was coming in on the list.
I think I know where it is coming in, but I'm not even going to go there. I don't know what to say about that list.
We're speechless.
And the worst part about this, Marcus, like I actually like Brett Favre, but Alfred is starting to make me dislike the man.
Wait till football season starts with the Packers.
Yeah.
Hey, they're gonna reunite with Brett Favre. They might retire his number this season. There have been some fences mended there, and that just warms my heart.
I'm gonna retire your list.
It's going to Canton.
Let's go to a real list, fellas. This is a real list of veteran players that made an impact that were memorable. And since we're talking football, I'll stick with football theme, and I'll go with another quarterback who happens to be a African-American quarterback, or quarterback, as I like to call him. One, Charlie Batch. Charlie Batch is he was the second pick in the 1998 draft. Was the 2012 Byron Wizard White NFL Man of the Year. 61 career passing TDs. And he broke the stereotype. He didn't fit the mold of your typical black quarterback. Charlie Batch wasn't a scrambler. I mean, he could move around the pocket, but he wasn't the guy that was going to tuck and run like Michael Vick or Donovan McNabb early on in his career. Charlie Batch only had 637 rushing yards for his career, 6 rushing TDs. He was like a coach on the field, or a coach, excuse me, on the sideline in his backup capacity, helped Ben Roethlisberger, you know, and some of the other quarterbacks he had a chance to work with. He got screwed in Detroit when they went and got Joey Harrington, and we see how well that turned out. Joey Harrington was out of the league in 5 seasons. Charlie Batch was still keeping the moving. Charlie Batch, to me, is a guy that should get a coordinator position or a coaching job somewhere. You know, I think he'd be an asset to somebody's coaching staff. And Charlie Batch, good guy and a fan favorite. Number 1 on my list. Number 2 on my list, we go into the world of baseball and a guy that his government name is Leon Joseph Roberts, but you could just call him Bip. Bip Roberts from the San Diego Padres and the Cincinnati Reds and a myriad of other teams was a 12-year Major League veteran, an All-Star in 1992, and he is the current National League record holder for the most consecutive base hits with 10 base hits in a row. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but you try to go out there and get 10 hits every time at bat. Bip Roberts did that. Bip Roberts was a good defensive player, played in the infield, played in the outfield. I remember back, I used to be a Padres fan for a brief time when I lived in San Diego, and they had this thing, it was the four tops, and it was Tony Gwynn, Fred McGriff, Roberto Alomar, and somebody else, the shortstop, Omar Vizquel maybe, but it was somebody. But Bip Roberts was like the unofficial fifth member of the four tops. And, you know, he was a fan favorite and the guy that really, you know, he was the only Padre that really came around to the San Diego Padres kids club meetings. Bip Roberts was doing that for the
kids. That's because he was their height.
Bip was doing that for the kids and the children. And I appreciated what Bip Roberts meant to that community. So he gets number 2 on my list. Finally, number 3. One of my favorite all-time basketball players, the Croatian sensation, Tony Kukoc. Now, he had a pretty solid 13-year NBA career, 3-time NBA champ with the Bulls. He was a sixth man of the year. But even better than that, he was one of the greatest European basketball players ever. The FIBA, the Federation of International Basketball Association, I think that's what it stands for, which I don't know why you need to be a federation and an association at the same time. That's too many Asians. But
what do you got against Asians?
Oh, hey, let's I love Wei Ting. he's ranked on the list of the 50 greatest basketball players in history, in the history of FIBA. And, you know, he was always on those Olympic teams, those great Croatian Olympic teams, and those teams back in the day, you know, and before I was in Yugoslavia and before they had that split. Those were some tough teams that gave the United States a run for their money back in the day. So I love Tony Kukoc. He was a good shooter, good passer, knew his role. And, you know, the lasting memory I have of Kukoc is that game against the Knicks where Scottie Pippen got a headache and got mad because Phil Jackson put Tony Kukoc in. And Tony was like, okay, I got this. He got the ball, turned around, hit the 15-footer. Boom, Bulls win the game. And everybody's happy, everybody having a good time, except for Scottie Pippen, who's sitting on the bench looking like a sad panda. So Tony Kukoc is the third person on my list. So I got Tony Kukoc, Bip Roberts, and Charlie Batch. So what do you think about that, Marcus?
I like your list. You know, Charlie Batch has had a lot of time holding clipboard, so he would fit in great as a coach because he's been doing it for most of his career now. Kukoc was one of those guys that the Bulls wouldn't have had their success without Kukoc. You know, he really helped fill that role as the third guy behind Jordan and Pippen. So he's someone who's underrated and someone who can thank like the lights of Vlade Divac and for allowing him to come over to the NBA and to play. So I like those two, and I love Bip Roberts. You know, even though he was a Padre, he's one of those guys that sort of people forget about unless you're a hardcore baseball fan. So I like the list, Alfred.
I, too, like the list. I like the addition of Charlie Batch, even though he may be no Brett Favre. What I like about Charlie Batch, what comes to mind, was actually last season in December when the Steelers played the Ravens on the road, and they come off of an ugly loss to the Cleveland Browns, and Charlie Batch was catching flack because he wasn't playing well behind Ben Roethlisberger, who was hurt. And Charlie was just basically saying, hey, I could still play this game. I may not be a superstar, but I can still play. He goes on to lead the Steelers to a fourth-quarter rally at Baltimore that eventually became the Super Bowl champions, and there was a very cool moment when him and Ben Roethlisberger embraced on the sideline because, you know, guys really root for Charlie Batch to do well. No, he's no threat to take Ben Roethlisberger's starting job, but he's a guy that they just want to see do well, and somebody who I, too, believe will be a head coach one day.
Yeah, I think Charlie showed how valuable, you know, a veteran backup can be. You know, when Ben Roethlisberger went down and he was, you know, kind of there keeping the Steelers, you know, he wasn't great, but he was solid enough to keep that Steelers ship afloat. So, you know, big up to Charlie Batch. So that's my list. And closing things off, Brother Marcus, and hopefully your list is not just the same person wearing different uniforms.
It's not the same person wearing different uniforms, but it's from the same sport. It's a similar to Alfred, but, you know, I actually had three different players. So I'm a huge baseball fan, and I decided to go with the baseball route for this list. So number three on my list, Darren Oliver of the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, black pitchers are just as rare as black quarterbacks these days. So I wanted to pay homage to three black pitchers, starting with lefty Darren Oliver, who's still going strong in year number 20 for the Toronto Blue Jays. He's turned into a reliever. He's only made one start in the last 9 years, but you know, Oliver has managed to carve his niche out as that lefty in the bullpen that you can rely on. So, number three on my list, Darren Oliver. Number two, LaTroy Hawkins of the New York Mets. you know, similar to Oliver, he started his career off as a starter before transitioning to a reliever in 2000. You know, he had time in Minnesota and Baltimore. Currently with the Mets, he's now age 40, and he's had a strong year so far, nearly striking out a batter per inning this season. So number two on my list, LaTroy Hawkins.
I think LaTroy is a Virginia guy too.
I believe he is. Yeah.
For some reason, I think he's from Chesapeake, but I might be wrong. But yeah, I'm pretty sure he's from Virginia.
And number one on my list, Arthur Rhodes.
Oh,
there you go.
Man, this dude, he was the definition of old man swag. Arthur was best known for wearing jewelry on the mound, including these earrings that were so shiny one day that it distracted Omar Vizquel back in 2001 to the point where it nearly caused a brawl. Vizquel said that the sun was bouncing off the earrings and it was distracting him to plate. Benches cleared, all over some earrings. And then after the game, when Arthur Rhodes was asked about it, he had his great quote. He said, I never heard anything like that. A little scrawny hitter like him, he's a little midget. Why is he telling me to take my earrings out? When I face him again, I will go right at him. So, you know, Arthur took no crap. He had a fine career. He's currently out of baseball, though I did read that the Baltimore Orioles were actually looking at him before the season started this year to sort of bring him in, but I guess it didn't work out. So just wanted to pay homage to three black relievers because, you know, this is probably a further discussion one day, but the number of black players in baseball is dwindling, and so I just want to pay a little homage to three black relievers. So Darren Oliver, LaTroy Hawkins, and Arthur Rhodes.
Yeah, on the side note, I was always a big fan of black pitchers, like one of my favorite pitchers ever, and I don't even know what happened to him. I think he only played like three seasons, was Marvin Freeman for the Braves.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just, not only was he a solid reliever, but he also, you got this black dude pitching with the last name Freeman in the middle of the South, in the capital of the South, you know what I'm saying, Atlanta. And it was like, I like Marvin Freeman. So big up to you, Marvin Freeman, wherever you are. Probably out there hanging with Ozzie Canseco.
Hopefully not Otis Nixon.
he's the getaway driver for Otis. So Marcus had Darren Oliver, Arthur Rhodes, and LaTroy Hawkins. Solid list. What do you think about that, Alfred?
Thought it was a good list. I like the theme of black pitchers. I was hoping to hear a Doc Ellis sighting because Doc Ellis is one of the most fascinating pitchers I've ever seen. He's before my time, obviously, but I've seen a lot of documentaries on him. He's just really somebody. Just watch one documentary on this guy. Fascinating pitcher. He once threw a no-hitter, he claims, while high on LSD. And in that game, he actually walked eight batters, but it was still a no-hitter while high on LSD. So maybe he was. But Doc Ellis, Pittsburgh Pirate. And then Big Ray King, who, okay, not 10 seasons. He played 9 seasons. He bounced around a little bit, had a losing record, wasn't the greatest pitcher. But he had some good stuff. He stood at 6 foot, 265 pounds, like an offensive lineman standing out there dealing.
That's a big boy.
Big boy.
Those are our picks. Now it is time, as always, to hear what you, the people, have to say. And for that, again, we go to our Facebook page. You can leave feedback each and every week on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, and also on Twitter at KozPod on Twitter, KOS_POD. So, Brother Alfred, what do the people have to say about their favorite sports veterans?
Let's kick it right back to Scott McCulloch, who said, I was born in Montreal and I grew up being a fan of the Expos, so two of my favorite veteran baseball players were Gary Carter and Andre Dawson, even after they left. As for NBA, my main man, the only player in the NBA with one name, love him even when he had two, Nene. Thanks, guys. And then Daniel Stack says, Paul Konerko was great for the Chicago White Sox. Doesn't say much after that. Bill Winters chimes in and says, I don't think, well, let's start with Jamie Robinson, who was on the show last week. He said, Rudy Poshcheck, 817 penalty minutes, 123 fights, and 364 career games. I think he had more penalty minutes in his career than he had playing minutes. Rudy had a jackhammer for a right arm and was my favorite enforcer for the New York Rangers. Then Bill Winters kind of came back at Brother Jamie and said, I don't think Rudy played 10 years in the NHL, which I believe he did. I'll go with, and as a Mets fan, I think it kills me, Mariano Rivera didn't even start his career as a closer, setup man for John Wendland, and completely redefine the position. We can speak about watching him like people speak about watching Ruth. Plus, he's a class act. Just wish he played for a team that I don't completely despise. Why would you despise the Yankees? What's there to despise about that great, brilliant, class act?
How much time you got?
Yeah. Wait, you're a Yankee fan?
Okay, Braves fan.
You're a Yankee fan?
I love the Yankees. I love. Did you figure it out?
Alfred is the biggest front runner in the state.
I mix it up. Look, I love the Milwaukee Bucks, right? And then nobody talks about the Milwaukee Bucks. I love my Bucks, but then again, you got to mix in some Yankees in there, a little bit of the Green Bay Packers. So I got to mix up everything.
Interesting side note about Rudy Poshcheck. I was doing some research earlier, Brother Jamie. His original pronunciation of his name was Rudy Poshcheck, and the reason for that was, you know, back in about, I think it was like 72, he used to dabble in prostitution, and he went by the name of Rudy Poshcheck. So a little interesting tidbit, a little factoid there for you. That's what we do. Not only do we entertain, but we also educate.
Hose, give me my check.
That's when he developed that strong right hand.
Not that we condone such violence.
No, we do not condone. We do not condone violence against women.
We just laugh at it.
We're not Amanda Bynes. We don't. We don't encourage that. Oh, but on that note, we are going to wrap things up for this Memorial Day edition of the Kings of Sport. But before we get out of here, we do want to extend a big shout out to our sponsor, Audible.com. Go to Audible.com right now and get a free audiobook with a free 30-day trial. All you got to do is log on to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. That's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. As well, you can check out the show. We've got this is episode 11, so head over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Share it with your friends. Check us out on Stitcher Radio and thekingsofsport.com. The Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. Twitter, KOSPOD, KOS_POD on Twitter. And that's a lot of plugging right there. So I'll stop plugging for a while and let Brother Marcus know. Let the people know, Brother Marcus, how they can get in touch with you, follow your work.
You can find me on Twitter at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Big Nasty.
You can find me on Twitter at This Is Nasty. You know the drill. Go to Bleach Report. Read the articles. Watch the video.
And hate on them.
Oh, of course. But there's none of that.
Yeah, that's a given at this point.
There's none of that, guys.
I'm sure you're going to get a lot of hate for that brilliant Brett Favre answer.
Bring it on. Bring it on, Facebook.
You need practice for quoting that tweet. So, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. And, again, follow all of us at KOSPOD, KOS_POD. So that's going to do it for this week. But, again, we want to give a big shout-out to all of our men and women in uniform. Rest in peace to those that have given their lives in service to this great country. You know, because they do what they do, it allows us the freedom to be able to do what we do. And, we love being able to bring this show to you. So, big ups to the military out there. So, for Marcus Vanderberg, for Big Nasty Africanua, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and I'm about to go grab me a cold one and some more barbecue. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Brand new Cadillac, be nice and be up. We get them chains out, can't stop the heat up. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.